Welcome. My name is Dr. Lauren Cohen, and I am your host for the Spiritual Success Summit. We are here to pull back the curtain to reveal the challenges, myths, and misconceptions that we often experience when applying the principles of consciousness and spirituality into our lives, and to provide practical and tangible solutions so you can successfully create the spiritually inspired life you desire. Today's guest is Susie Ramroop. Susie came from the corporate world, and she was doing coaching on the side for about 10 years, but not quite having the confidence to take the leap into her true calling until the stress of the corporate life spilled over into her health and her relationships. She started saying no to other people's demands and saying yes to things that were important to her, which are helping people change their lives and her enjoying her time with her family. Now she helps highly successful people that have lost their way and their love for life craft the life of their dreams with lasting success. Susie, I am so happy to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm honored.
You know, I really am excited to have you here because your story is so much a reflection of what many people experience in their own life. And most of us are really feeling like we are, failures at life. Instead of recognizing that part of the spiritual journey is seeing that we're not quite on track with the life that we would like to live, and ultimately making that decision to shift into creating the life that we were here to live. And I just love that. So can you share a little bit more about your own personal journey?
Yeah, sure. So I have always been what I would describe as over-responsible. So, you know, I don't know how I learned it, probably from my parents, I guess. You know, most of us learn stuff from our parents. But I always had this feeling that I had to be the one to step into the space. So, you know, if someone said, who knows the answer to X question at school, or can I ask for a volunteer for Y, it would always be me that thought, oh, God, maybe that she's talking to me. They're asking me to put my hand up. And I always took it really, really, really personally. So I became this over-responsible, high-performing person, which I didn't think at the time came brilliantly naturally to me. I know now that I am high-performing and I am naturally talented in a number of areas. But I always had some degree of shame about that, which because I was trying to prove it to people. So I guess, what you've just said made me think, this is about other people's perceptions mainly. And my whole life was plotted out to meet what I believed other people expected of me. So, you know, it was my parents, I didn't want to let them down. My boss, who put so much faith in me, I had to, you know, do the best I could for him. And it really wasn't until, you know, a couple of years ago that I thought, I've never asked myself. I always, always performed for other people. And I realized it had made me miserable. And it was really, you know, I tolerated it for a very long time. But I was consulting in one particular assignment. And the place just made me feel uncomfortable is just not a severe enough word. I was physically repulsed, which sounds dramatic, but I think when you get so much awareness in yourself that you haven't been listening to your needs, and all of a sudden they're all shouting at you, I thought, this is just not the place for me. I can't do this anymore. Why am I here? And the minute I acknowledged that not only was I not meeting my needs, but I was coming home, and that feeling was trickling through to my husband and my daughter, and we have a very harmonious home, that was when I just said, no more. And I just quit. You know, overnight, I just quit. And, you know, I had a very healthy six-figure salary, and I thought, nothing is worth feeling this way, and I quit.
Wow. You know, you have just spoken into so many deep concepts, and I'm juggling where to kind of which one of these, to kind of sort of, start us off in our conversation. Because, some people may look at you and say, wow, but she is high performing, therefore she was able to do it, and she's brave, and therefore she's able to do it. But, honestly, the truth is that when the pain gets great enough, when we you were saying like physically repulsed, it's like it gets big enough that the pain of standing still and remaining out of alignment and out of integrity with ourselves and with our families and with our lives, when the pain gets big enough, it becomes the fuel to step through into at least the journey to discover who we truly are and create what we really want. So, again, I love that you shared that in that way. And you shared two other really important things, and I want to just kind of sort of list them, and then, and we'll see where the conversation goes. One of which was that we often have gifts that when we're younger, we don't really recognize them as gifts. You recognize that you are a high achieving person. It's just part of your nature. It's how you were designed, and part of your the purpose of your life. You are uniquely designed for that. And in that, you needed to be a high achieving person because something in that skill set is helping you accomplish what you have come to this planet in this lifetime to accomplish. But when we're younger, our gifts often get intertwined with, our family dynamic and the cultural dynamic. And we sometimes end up using our gifts as a compensation because they come easy to us. So it's easy to harness it, to step into something that we believe in ourselves is lacking often. And we tend to think that our gifts are really bad things at initially on our self-awareness journey. But in fact, it's not the gift that is, out of alignment. It's the use of our gift. And part of that healing process for you, what you were illustrating, was that when you came through that personal healing journey and you started to really understand the truth of who you are, the gift that gave you shame, that you were using earlier on as compensation, really is something that you now have embraced and use beautifully and powerfully in your life and in your work. Can you, can you share a little bit about how you made that transition, from the shame aspect of your gift to the empowerment of your gift?
I don't even know if I have that answer. And there's something about turning 40 that I feel relates to that answer. There's a number of my clients that when they have a deadline rather than a milestone, as I like to call it, looming, and all of a sudden they just get clarity, or they want clarity and they're prepared to pay to get it. I think the shame, going back to that for a minute, that came from, I'm a dynamic person. I was a very, very good deliverer in the land of global corporate jobs. And with that comes some of other people's stuff. And I think, I was always, it was a very male world. I was a relatively young female who was, relatively senior, well, very senior for the age that I was, I suppose. And I think that in that scenario, I just had people try to take me down. Being blunt, that's what it felt like. People were throwing at me their stuff, and their judgments and their thoughts with no real regard for my emotions. And actually, because I was that over-responsible person, and I am still this way to a certain degree. I just manage the waste process better. So what I mean by that is, you know, I can now recognize if somebody criticizes me, I can work out, yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, that was about them. Okay. You know, so I can kind of sort through them quite efficiently, but I don't carry other people's stuff. Whereas when I was, you know, Miss Over Responsible, particularly in a world of work that I had no control over, I think I took it all on because I felt I had to. And I think the you know, going back to your question of, you know, the change in that process, I think I got so full up with other people's views that they almost came full circle. So if you can picture, you know, you have a garment, I'm the garment, and it keeps getting adapted, and we snip a bit and we take it up and we let it out here and we adjust it there and we, you know, dye this bit and we bleach that bit. And actually, you realise you've either butchered the whole item or it looks remarkably like it did when you started. And so I felt a bit butchered, but actually I realised that the people were really saying they wanted me to be the person I was. But I'd gone through this whole process of adaption to please everybody else that I was virtually unrecognizable. So I think, you know, that confidence that I lacked was the confidence in being me and, you know, not being judged by everyone else, but mainly not being attached to the judgment of everybody else. And, you know, when you're a senior female who's young, you're the object of some of that a lot of the time. And that was how I felt.
Yeah, you know, again, you're speaking into such a powerful point about self-acceptance that as children, we look to the people around us to reflect back who we are. With, you know, with a sense of, you know, acceptance and acknowledgement and validation, you know, so that reflection validates, you know, our own experience and our own perception. And when, for whatever reason, it's not reflected back properly or we're not being validated properly when we're younger, we continue to go into our, you know, our adult life. And also it's in our culture, it's still infused in our culture, that we are supposed to be validated by people outside. That, you know, it's good if other people accept us, and if other people don't accept us, then that's a bad thing, and we should change, you know, like you were saying, like constantly alter the garment in order to please other people and fit other people's yardstick, if you will, of who we are supposed to be, at, you know, as individuals. Like, you know, we're supposed to all conform, and when we don't conform, that's a problem, that's something bad, and we're supposed to, you know, change. And part of the spiritual journey, and, you know, I speak it as it's not just a journey forward, it's a journey home. And as you were sharing, you know, you were saying that it was like you had altered all of these different things back, and ultimately what you did in this whole alteration process was you were kind of sort of trying all these different things and eventually came back to exactly where you started and said, I'm me.
Yeah.
You're me. So the journey, although we're walking in a forward direction, we're actually walking around in a circle. And it's a, you know, it's an upward circle, it's a spiral. So we're not coming back exactly to the same place, but we're coming back to like the same starting point, one level up.
Yeah.
And then each time we move around the circle and we reconnect with another aspect of ourselves, we are moving up in that circle. So we're moving higher and higher in the spiral. And, you know, again, it's just that whole concept of self-acceptance is really, you know, in a nutshell, that's the spiritual journey, is discovering the truth of who we are is one aspect of it, and then accepting and self-validation is another. And then, you know, because you, again, then the next part of what you shared was that, you know, other people have their own viewpoints of the world and of the life and of us, you know, of you, of me. And that's their stuff. It has nothing to do with our own inner sense of self. And when we're solid within ourselves, we can just allow people to have their own opinions, good, bad, or otherwise, but it doesn't change the truth of who we are. We stop becoming chameleons to please other people.
Yeah, which sounds very straightforward, but of course it isn't. And, you know, that long amount of time that I spent in that life, I mean, I'm guessing it was necessary. You know, it was necessary for me to have spent that long, that it was enough to keep me from ever considering it again. You know, because when you set up your own business, you're not going to suddenly recreate six figures. And you have to adjust your lifestyle slightly to the fact that, you know, you don't have that anymore. But you know what? It wasn't that difficult, because what I also didn't have was the guilt, the time I spent proving myself, the time I spent trying to juggle the amount of time I had, not just to socialize and, you know, do things, but to just do nothing, you know, and give myself the time and the space to have those realizations. Because, you know, you come away from a scenario like that really quite bruised.
You know, I just love how you voice this. And, you know, so much of the time when we're speaking about evolving, we talk about all the things that we will have, you know, like we will have, you know, happiness, and we will have joy, and we will have six figures if, you know, building a business and you know, earning an income of that magnitude is what you want. And what you just spoke into was something that most people don't really share, and it's so profound. It's, what are the things that you won't have when you evolve on the spiritual journey? And I love it. It's like, you won't have the guilt. You won't have the shame. You won't have the harsh and negative feelings. Like, it's like all of these things that you won't have are so awesome.
You won't have Sunday night despair, as I call it. You know, you've had a great weekend, and then you get that. Sometimes it's Sunday afternoon, and guys, if it's Sunday afternoon, do something, because if your weekend starts going downhill because of the thought of Monday morning, stop. Do something different and reconnect with what it is your heart and your gut really wants. And, you know, I wanted very simple things. I wanted to help people. I didn't want to help ungrateful people. I didn't want to help people that didn't acknowledge that they needed help. You know, I want to help people that are like, God, I need help. You know, people that are not, you know, they're great people. They've just forgotten that they're great people. They've been beaten up and bruised, as I've just described, in the way that I was. And they need to remember that some of it is about choices and, you know, choosing stuff that's pro you. And you know what? I had people who were jealous of me when I was jet setting around the world, and I've got people that are jealous of me because I have a great relationship with my husband and I actually get to see my daughter. And I just think, I think, you know, what are you jealous of? And why aren't you taking it? I didn't want to be one of those mums that would juggle childcare. I certainly didn't want to be one of those mums that said yes at work to what I perceived to be a non-negotiable request, because actually that was me doing that. You know, no one was forcing me to say yes to round the world trips. But I didn't want to be one of those people that said, oh, you know, I've just said yes to be in Switzerland on Monday and fly straight to Germany and then maybe drop into Paris on the way home. How will I manage my childcare? You know, that to me is not family. It's not what I wanted. So, you know, I would urge people that if they know what they want or they know what they don't want, it's possible. It really is. And what I really want for anyone that works with me is that they don't spend as long as I spent having that realization. Because it's, you know, it's unnecessary torture. I'm so dramatic, but you know, I feel really strongly that it's just not required to spend that long being that unhappy.
I teach a concept about emotions because my body of work that I ultimately created out of my life experience is something called emotional empowerment. And I ask the question, like, what if your emotions weren't a nuisance but a navigation system? And you were just sharing about how, if you're part of the way through your weekend and you start, dreading Monday morning, you're having an emotional reaction. And when we recognize, we go into a place of awareness and recognize that the sensations we're feeling, the emotions we're feeling are speaking to us, and they're pointing out with a large neon sign exactly what is going on and what's out of alignment. So when we become victims of our circumstances, we choose to be in that position, and we just, we go from week to week to week dreading going to work, or dreading the life that we have, where if we take a moment, remove judgment out of the field and say, why am I dreading Monday morning? Like, what is really happening here for me that I have that much resistance? Like, what is this experience? What is this feeling, bringing forth? What is the wisdom that is being shared with me from within me? It's aligning life with ourselves. And it becomes this amazing opportunity to really explore and understand, how to create the life that we truly want. Because people often go, well, great, well, if I'm not doing it based on an outer parameter, a cultural model, like, how do I do that? Because honestly, most of us don't know who we are. And that's a great place to start. Just kind of settle down and kind of notice. I had a client way back when in my practice, and he had headaches. And they were debilitating headaches. And we were just talking about it, and it turns out that he never has headaches over the weekend, but Sunday night, the headaches start showing up, and by Monday morning, it's like completely devastated. And I said, what was so amusing about it, and not, laughing at him, but really looking at how often we all do this, it was so, the pattern was so obvious, but he was so immersed in it that he couldn't see that during the week he had headaches and on the weekends he didn't. Like, it was just, and I was like, do you see this? And when I said it, he just sat there and, kind of started, just went mute for a moment. Like, he just sat there. And he was just like, how did I not see that? And I'm like, because we're not taught to look at our physical symptoms. We're not taught to look at our emotions. We're not taught to recognize that they're communications. There's something, we're supposed to work and work hard and earn money and do this, that, and the other. But what if we could have both? We could have the life we wanted and a job that we loved, as opposed to, it's not an either or anymore, it's a both and. And you seem to have just done that so beautifully. I have to have
a note of caution here, which is that I know that sounds simple, but I appreciate very much how it isn't. And actually, when you know you're in that position, the thought of trying to get out is quite difficult. But I really, the thing I want to look into here is judgment, because, one of the things I didn't want to do was disappoint people. So, I always say, if you're going to make a plan to go to the gym every day, you have to get someone else who you'd have to let down, because it's so much easier for other people to disappoint themselves than it is to disappoint someone else. And really, that's what I was doing. I, even with that Sunday night thing, even with, I was really suffering from stress, like really. And it, I had irritable bowel syndrome for years because of the stress. And, it manifests in our body. And those were all the signs that I just ignored because I didn't want to disappoint anyone and let anyone down. And, I had set that place up to depend on me because I was over-responsible and because I always delivered and because I ignored my own needs at all times. I thought that I had to stay there until midnight the night before the board meeting, and I thought I had to fly from one country to the next to save money, and I thought and I thought and I thought, and no one else cared. The bottom line is nobody else cared. So when I say it's about choice, I mean it's about what we choose to assume. So I chose to assume the most impossible scenario for me, the most difficult, the most hard work, the most draining, the most depleting, and I sold it to myself as, yeah, I'm flying around the world and I eat in great restaurants. So what? You know, that's not something that I'm going to put on my headstone when I die, you know. But the fact is, it was about other people again. So actually, if you can just park for a moment something. So I think the thought of leaping into a life you love is going to be too much for a lot of people. Whereas if we start trying to deconsider one thing at a time, and I think assuming the best is something that you can play with. You know, it's not something you have to adopt overnight. It's not something that you have great expectations of. But it's something that you can try that will generate evidence that actually that's better for you and serves you well compared with what you're doing now.
Yeah, you know, you're speaking into something so very important. And it's something I brought up a few times during the summit. Is, you know, we live in a what I call a soundbite culture, where we tend to kind of sort of simplify everything. You know, we want everything quick and easy, and we simplify it. Like I call it the myth of thoughts become things. Not that it is a myth, but when people accept that that is the entire process, like they just think something and something will manifest, it's like it never works. And it's the same thing here, that on our journey, we often think that once we have this moment of awareness, like we're supposed to change everything instantaneously. And really, there's a process. Like there's, and this is, again, an oversimplification, but at first, we're oblivious and miserable. You know, like we're just oblivious to what's occurring. And then we step into a place of awareness where we begin to observe. And we still don't quite understand, but we're at least recognizing what's occurring. And then we have a place of awareness and the beginning of action, where we're starting to understand what our awareness is meaning for us, and we're able to then move into taking different action and guided action. And it's a practice. You know, it's not an event. It's not like, oh, I got it, boom, you know, the next day everything's different. It's, you know, it's again, we talk about unlearning and then relearning, and that's where the unlearning and relearning happens. And it takes time to do. And as we engage in it, it gets easier and easier along the way until ultimately we pop out the other side and we are having, you know, now we're in a state of bliss, you know, as opposed to where we started, you know, being miserable. Mm-hmm. And I love that you're sharing that, because again, on, you know, a lot of what happens in the spiritual world is we speak about all the wondrous stuff that happens and forget to tell people what it's really like between where they are and what it takes to get there. Yeah. And people are really getting tripped up, and when they start the journey and things aren't going pleasantly, because a lot of this journey is really about coming undone. It's not pleasant, but it's very powerful, and it's worth every moment. But we forget about all, you know, like that it is a process and it is a journey, and that's why it's so important that we all come together in community to support each other along the way. Like, it's not a journey that you can do completely by yourself.
No. Well, so this is probably why people spend so long in struggle, because they don't acknowledge that. So I think what you've just said is one of the steps on awareness. So, you know, personally, I've always had a coach, but I didn't have a business coach until recently. And that was one day I sat there and I kind of threw my hands up in the air and I thought, why am I struggling with this? I don't want this to be another repeat of my whole story where I just sat with it for too long. And I think the gains that you get when you do pop out the other side, as you say, are that your awareness isn't just there so that you know. Your awareness is there to equip you to quickly go through the process each time. So, you know, when something pops up, for example, you know, one of the things you might want to remove from your life is people that drain you, for example. And I have removed some of those people from my life because they were pulling me down. So when I was trying to be positive, so I had the awareness, I was coming out of miserable, people seem to want to put me back in there. And I think when you've got that level of awareness, you go, hold on a minute, I was doing well, and why am I suddenly feeling down again? And that's a bit like the Sunday night analysis that you just offered, which is when you've got that awareness, you can go, hold on a minute, this isn't serving me. But when you get that feeling, whether it's in your brain, in your belly, take action, because it's right. That's why you're feeling it in your body.
Yes. So what would you, in your assessment, say is the greatest challenge, myth, or misconception that people are experiencing in this journey?
You want me to pick one?
I know, it's such a big question.
I totally have it. It's one of those umbrella ones, though, I'm afraid. I think for me, the thing that tripped me up was that I thought I'd be fixed.
Mm.
So, you know, you said you go from unaware and miserable and into aware and miserable. Well, first of all, that's a disappointment because you think, well, I'm aware now. Why am I miserable? Well, you're miserable because you've got all of the old habits that you had and all of the old beliefs and the thought patterns, and, you know, your brain is wired in a certain way, and that has to, as you said earlier, get undone. But I think it's really a health warning, and I don't think it's stated anywhere that you will get fixed. But like you said, all of these texts and videos that we see online, they're all very pro, and what they don't do is say you're going to fall at some point, because, you know, you can't keep going up those steps on that upward spiral and not get a bit dizzy and look down at the bottom and then lose your horizon. You know, it's going to happen. The difference is that when you are aware and you have come out of miserable and you start looking after yourself, your resilience improves. And so you can reflect on that and go, wow, I'm on my backside. How did that happen? And, you know, I'll admit, in my journey, and I had to, you know, as I said, I quit. I gave myself 6 months of nothing, just me. Just thinking about me and worrying about me and enjoying the things that I love. In that time, I cried a lot. And I used to get annoyed with myself. Why am I crying? I know what the problem is. Why am I crying? First of all, I believe it's because I had a habit of crying because I was miserable for so long. But also because I was disappointed with myself. You know, I'm that high performing person, and all of a sudden I wasn't high performing. I didn't belong anywhere. I wasn't accountable to anyone other than me. And you know, I think when you kind of say, yes, I'm going for it, and I commit to this transformation, and all of a sudden you have a setback, you think it's all over. It's a bit like the diet, you know, and you have a chocolate bar and you think, well, what's the point? Let's just stop the diet. Well, no. You had the chocolate bar maybe because you needed to remind yourself that you don't like them that much anymore, or because you just fancied the chocolate bar. But it's not the end of the world. The point is to go, you know what, I had a chocolate bar anyway. The track I was on was, and just get back on it. So there's something about self-acceptance, self-forgiveness, self-love, ultimately. And that judging that you kind of lose your attachment to in other people, you've got to do it to yourself as well. That, for me, is the key. So the myth is that it's going to work without complications.
You know, I'm very visual. Like, I think in visual analogies, and it helps me to translate. And I always explain the journey. I have a few different analogies for this, but one of them for those in our listening audience, to really just kind of sort of get a visual image of what this journey looks like the ups and downs, is it looks like a financial chart where, you know, you have, you know, the you know, the X and Y axis, and in the lower left corner is where you're starting, and in the upper right corner is where you're heading. But the financial chart doesn't just have this smooth, straight line. It goes up and down and up and down and up and down, but even with the ups and downs, it's still moving diagonally from the lower left up to the upper right. So even in those moments where we feel like we're falling backwards, oftentimes people go, oh, you see, it doesn't work. I've gone all the way back to the beginning. And I go, really? Let's really look at this. Where are you? So yeah, we go back and we go forward and we go back and go forward, but ultimately we are always moving in an upward direction. So when we recognize on the journey that there are going to have, you know, be times where we're going to be in one of those, you know, those dips, it's not pleasant when we're in it, but we recognize that it's a normal part of the journey and we don't beat ourselves up for it. And we recognize that we will come through it. And, you know, Susie, this has been such a powerful conversation today. And, you know, I know that you also have a free gift for all of our listeners to help them along the way. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, and actually it plays in really well to the conversation we just had. So it's a three-part video series that I developed for my own subscribers because they asked for it. So, you know, I said to them, where are you struggling at the moment? And there were three big themes. One of them was around confidence. So a bit like the myth of do this and you'll be fixed. Saying just be more confident for me doesn't wash it. So I've got in there three tips that I think will really help you improve your confidence. And I have an example in there, which I used the day I filmed that video, and it was a major breakthrough for me. So just that mini story should convey to people that even when you're in the profession, you know, we're not perfect, but even when you're in the profession, every time I coach someone on something, I get a bit better. And the opportunity to keep growing is endless, as far as I'm concerned. So the first one's on confidence. The second one's on procrastination. So, you know, if I sum up that career story, really I was procrastinating. So I was in lack of awareness and then denial and then, yes, I'll do something, but I never do. And the angst that brings into your life and the wasted brain space and time for me is just nonsensical now that I know. So that is me trying to convey, again, some tips on what people can do immediately to resolve some of the procrastination in their lives. And then the third thing is really saying yes. So, you know, is this your time? Say yes and question the other things that you say yes to. All of your yeses should be for you and your life and for the things that you value. And that doesn't make you selfish. That just makes you really well equipped to live the life of your dreams and help others indirectly live theirs. So that's the three-part video series. So they all kind of tie together not quite nicely and definitely complement the conversation we just had.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And I love that it's in a video series because it makes it digestible. Sometimes it is a lot of information at once. Yeah. And truly the way we learn, there's a statistic for it, but like, you know, of all the information that we learn when we go to a big seminar or we go to something like that, like we really absorb only a really minute percentage. So the fact that you've broken it down that way, I think is so helpful and so, you know, so wonderful, you know, to assist our listeners.
So just to kind of explain to people, the introductory video therefore relates to the telesummit that I did recently called Taking a Leap. So in case people don't make that connection, that's the list of subscribers that I asked for what they needed. So there's a mini video there that you can listen to too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And before we go, do you have a tip, you know, or words of wisdom, you know, for our listeners that they can engage right away and start creating more ease on their journey?
Yeah, I think it relates to, well, first of all, watch the video series, because if when you finish that video series, you'll be in such yes mode that you will see the value in just taking some time for you. So, you know, that's not to assume that everybody isn't already doing that, but just question, what do you need? So, you know, I started off from a position where I wouldn't even give myself 15 minutes to myself. That seemed like a luxury, particularly with a small child. But actually now I know that I need an hour and 45 minutes is like my magical number, because I like to meditate, I like to read, I like to stare out of the window with nothing to do. You know, I like to drink coffee. I like to, oh, there's all these little things that I do. And, you know, when I don't do those things, I feel really out of sorts. So I would say do something for you and just create some space in your life that you don't fill up. Because without that space to just let things percolate in your mind, I don't think you'll ever get the clarity you need to move forwards to create a life you love.
Yeah, I just so love this tip. It's not just about living your life. It's about designing your life.
Absolutely, yeah, well said.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing. And Susie, again, it's an honor to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge, all of your life experience, all of your wisdom. It was such a wonderful interview. I'm so happy that you have joined us and, you know, on this summit.
Thank you. I had a great time, Lauren. It's been really good fun.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Until next time, be well and live a successful, spiritually inspired life.